This episode of Bushers Breakaway is brought to you by you, the fans. Thank you so much. The season is over, but we are still here. And for as little as a price of a cup of coffee or a beer, you can get ad-free episodes of this podcast on patreon.com/bushersbreakaway. You can support this dumb show. That's right. You're listening to it. Support us. Thank you so much. Fun show today. We didn't have John Brantzy, and then John Brantzy showed up. We talk a lot about rumors, players that we've talked about in the past, if they could become Rangers or not, if we want them or not. So the off-season fun is here. I wish you all the best surviving it, because the rumors will be hard and fast and very, very fun. But we'll be covering them all. You know where to find us every single week here. Without further ado, here's Mark Messier.
Hi, everybody. It's Mark Messier, and you're listening to Blue Shirts Breakaway, the number one Rangers podcast.
Bushers Breakaway fans, welcome to another week of the Bushers Breakaway. I am your host, Ryan Mead of Patreon.com, where you can support this wonderful podcast. And I'm here with my co-host, Greg Kaplan. And we don't talk politics on this podcast. Gregory, say hello.
Wait, what? We don't?
We're not allowed anymore.
Oh. Ooh.
I put out a statement. You didn't see that? There's a Slack notification. I cannot fucking believe this.
that was someone, probably, it's probably from the channel that is hashtag politics in our Slack group too.
It was so congratulations, unbelievable. Man, we're 1 week into the off season. I feel like I haven't talked to you in 2 years.
I saw you on Friday.
I know.
I understand what you're saying. We haven't had to do a podcast every other day the last
for two
week,
months. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Also, I literally saw you.
Yeah, you did. Yeah, that's true. Well. It's been a while for the Rangers stuff, though.
Also, if anybody's wondering what when Ryan isn't in the wedding, what does formal wear Ryan look like? No tie, two buttons deep, jacket wide open.
Miami Vice,
what,
baby.
What happened? What did you just walk out of the strip club and come right to the wedding?
I just figured like everyone's wearing ties. I wanted to be distinguished at Vinny's wedding. His wife said she liked the look, so I was really appreciative of that.
If there's anything I know about Bex, is she's just being nice. However, I will say. That wedding, we used to make fun of the look, but our grandfathers and our forebears, they're right.
Suspenders are the way to go. And I also, when I do eventually have a son, I need to say the line, every other person you brought home was a boy, but you married a man. Oh my God, Vinny.
I mean, first of all, it was a two-way burn, because first of all, burn on Bex.
Yeah, for sure.
And then second, I was like, wait, did she marry someone else? Like, what happened?
But yeah, Vinny is not, for people that don't know, Vinny, not the most manly looking dude of all time. Great guy, wonderful, one of our best friends, but like, a man? I don't know.
Yeah, Vin turned 23 and stopped aging.
Yeah, it was just over. Let's start with the Ranger question here. I've been kind of wondering this myself, and I know we don't play hypothetical games. We're going to do a little bit of that today.
Oh, boy.
How bad would the Avalanche have beaten the Rangers?
I mean, I don't know. I got to tell you, it's like, I understand what everyone is saying. And they're all saying, oh, but if the Rangers went up against this Avalanche team, it would be a bloodbath. It'd be a slaughter, blah, blah, blah. It's like, man, final score of game one was 6-2 against the Lightning. The Lightning just, it takes them a minute. I don't know. I don't know why. I don't understand it. It is way too early for Ranger fans to be like, wow, they're down two games, not heading back to Tampa. This series is over. Considering we just lived through this. And again, it's like, yeah, no, the Avalanche are a different beast. I get it. But guys, it's not a series until the home team loses. Like, how many times do we have to say this? It's that simple.
Yeah, I would expect Tampa to fight back in this series. I can't imagine them getting swept or going down 3-0. I mean, I didn't feel that way when the Rangers were playing them. They're just too good of a team. And we've seen this with Vasi so often, right? Where it's like, ooh, he looks vulnerable. And then it's like, he's never going to let anything else in. Now, the Avalanche are a different beast. Everybody's clicking on that team. They found their next Barclay Goodrow, like six of them. And everybody's scoring. Cake McCarr is unbelievable. I don't know if you saw that typo, but I can't stop thinking about it. Just Cake McCarr. He has his cake and eats it too. He's unbelievable. And the whole squad is, it's been a solid, like, the game one was really good, went to overtime, just like one of those, like, classic NHL games. Game two was just a slaughter. Just not so
I've
similar.
I've watched 0 minutes of the final. I'm going to watch 0 minutes of the final.
Don't blame you one bit. Let's get to some Ranger rumors. Because you know what? It's rumor time. We've been... Oh boy. I know. Stuff.
Well, you know what it is crazy? I had this realization today, and I was thinking about it in like the NHL aspect too, because it is going to be a bit of a condensed offseason. I know that. But like the NBA finals ended, what, last week?
Yep.
And then this week's the NBA draft. And I was like, what? Can I have a minute? Can I get a second?
Can I chill? And Kyrie's going to be a Knick?
Oh, God. No, he's not. Come on.
No, he's going to stay with Brooklyn. I don't really. Or maybe
I don't think he's staying with Brooklyn. I just don't think he's going to the Knicks.
You think he's
going
to actually make it to the Lakers?
I think he's actually going to make it to the Lakers. That's so I think it's going to be hilarious. I don't know how they're going to do it. It's going to have to be a three-teamer.
Yeah, what is LeBron going to do? What is he going
to do? It's not even the LeBron aspect of it. It's just there's no fucking way Durant is playing with Westbrook again.
If I was Durant, I'd be so pissed. I know this isn't an NBA podcast, but...
We're not even having Fitz on today. This is incredible.
I know. You chose to go to Brooklyn. You followed him, and now he's the one leaving. You're still in Brooklyn. You lost Harden. Oh, my goodness. That... Woof. Oh, meanwhile, your former team just won the championship again. Nice job, KD. Good job.
But they got Ben Simmons.
Oh, good. Wonderful. I forgot about that. rumor time, as addressed earlier. I think this is one we addressed a lot last year, and we're going to address it again because I think it's starting to rev its engine once again. And that's the Kane rumors from Chicago.
Ugh.
I know. We addressed it a lot over the summer. We had a couple. I know Larry Brooks wrote about it. You and I are pretty anti-Kane coming to the New York Rangers. I understand the talent. The charts aren't as nice as the name, if you look. I know he's been playing on the Chicago Blackhawks the last couple years. It's kind of like, okay, well, maybe he hasn't been trying as hard. Been a lot going on with that organization. But I just can't even see what the Rangers would begin to start trading for him. Is it like the standard Eichel package of just like Niels, Kraftsoff, and a pick? That's it? Is that getting
you? Well, I think, first of all, it has to be more because the Blackhawks have to eat money. I understand it's still just 1 year's worth of money. But you can't even do the Eichel package because you are asking Chicago to do something you weren't asking Buffalo to do, which is keep some of that money that they can't otherwise use for other purposes. I'm not even saying trying to make the roster better, but just like doing the Yzerman where they just get free draft picks for eating a bad contract for a year or two. You're prohibiting them from doing that by essentially trading him to the Rangers. I think it's pretty funny, not maybe haha funny, but like, come on. Some people push back on my Stastny stuff. There's one because I forgot that Stastny was one of the idiots who were like the Canadian convoy is a good thing, blah, blah, blah. And was like actively trying to fund it. And they said one of the reasons they don't like Stastny is because of what his influence would do to the locker room. And some of those people are like, yeah, but Patrick Kane.
Good guy.
It makes you think. Also, I, as I said before, I get it. I obviously don't agree with any of the politics of guys like Paul Stastny. We don't need a good one. Don't need anyone coming at us. But all I'm saying is look at Adam Fox's likes and then chirp me one more time. That's it. That's all I'll say.
Love Adam Fox. Be very clear.
Yeah, but anyway, like ignoring my own personal feelings for Kane, ignoring whether I think he's a good person, I feel like he's answered that question pretty emphatically on his own and doesn't need a simpleton like me weighing in on it to make it obvious. You need the Blackhawks to eat 50% of his salary just to make the numbers work. Because since last time we talked, Sammy Blay is back. It is about what we expected it to be, considering he missed half the season. I think it's fine. If he wants to continue commenting sexy babe on family member pictures, go for it. That is his prerogative. I whatever.
Would be funny
understand.
If he like commented on his grandma's Instagram.
Sexy babe. To be fair, like there was a whole at the rehearsal dinner. A couple of my friends and I, we got into an entire like 25-minute conversation on what words like mid bussin, mid, like what that shit actually means. And I was like, I've just never been more old in my entire life. So it's completely possible that when I saw someone say like it's Quebec slang and it means something. I don't fucking know. I don't participate. I just know the optics aren't great. That's all I can
just
say.
Just a PR guy. That's all I say.
That's it. That's it. That's it. If he was my client, I'd be like, could we pick a different thing? Like, say bussin. Call your sister bussin. Everyone would understand it.
I don't.
And the people that don't want to at least think it's sexual.
Craig, I feel like I'm on the internet. I don't know what bussin means. Like, I'm pretty on the internet, you know? I have no idea. No
Sarah
clue.
Griffin knows. Ask Sarah. She knows.
All right.
Friend of the show.
I'll ask her. Yeah, Sammy Blake, the contract is rather reasonable. I'm actually looking for it right now, but if you – oh, it's a 1.525. Fun.
Yeah, it's nothing money. It's nothing money.
Nothing money. Good business by Drury. Congratulations. But even then, like you were saying about Patrick Kane, it's like got to eat half. And is right wing really what you're looking for?
I think – well – it's not that necessarily it isn't a need. I think that's fair. Like, again, there are two ways you can approach the season. You can approach it. You can try and do the Avalanche model, but even the Avalanche added the deadline. But the Avalanche, for the most part, were a complete package heading into the season, right? So you could try to get all your business done in the offseason, let it marinate for 82 games, run into the playoffs with it. Or you could do what Drury did last year when he wasn't able to get his guy, which is he gave guys a long runway. And if he didn't think it was going to work, he had enough time and enough assets to make the adjustments at the deadline. And it's what the Lightning do very successfully. It's what many teams do. I would say like most teams besides the Maple Leafs and the Blues, for the most part, they kind of figure their shit out at the deadline. And if you're the New York Rangers, why wouldn't you want to give Lafreniere and Kako 50 games to just like show us what you got? Can you take your game to another level, or do we have to add pieces around the rim again of this roster to boost everything up? And if you're making a move for Kane, you're essentially taking away your ability to do that mid-season. And the counter argument to that be like, well, you don't need to do that midseason. You have Patrick Kane. Like, what more would you have to add at the deadline if you added a guy like Patrick Kane? Fair. But think of the players you're giving up to get Kane, right? You're taking away one of your young, controllable wings, probably Kako. You're taking away young defensive depth, one of Lundqvist and Jones. And if it's Jones, by the way, you're taking away an actual 18-game player. Like 18 players needs to dress every night. So if you trade Jones, you now need to go out and get another piece. And again, you're eating up so much of the salary cap space without addressing another middle six center, without addressing defensive depth, without addressing a backup goalie. They're not positions we necessarily thought are super important, and you're not necessarily impacting Keandre Miller's future contract. I get that because it's a one-year deal. But you're adding enough extra algebra to what you need this team to do that you honestly have to ask yourself if you are better getting Patrick Kane and nothing else or keeping Kaapo Kakko and adding two pieces of impact. Not necessarily Kane impact, but like, you know, instead of going stars and scrubs, you can kind of go mid-level exception.
I get that. I totally understand. It's just the Kane thing. I don't see it making the Rangers a better team. I'd rather have. I know Patrick Kane is awesome.
But doesn't well? No. But to your point, not to cut you off. But to
yeah,
your,
go ahead.
I think the point you're really making, and I totally agree with. It's not that the Rangers are necessarily not making them a better team. It's just what really failed the New York Rangers in the playoffs this year: depth. You're not making the Rangers deeper because you're gonna have to trade your young depth to get Patrick Kane. So you're going to start next season. You think you've addressed one problem, scoring. But what it's not high-end scoring the Rangers lack. It's scoring throughout the lineup. And it's when your stars aren't playing well, did the Rangers have enough in the other parts of this team to carry the slack? And the answer was no. So you're adding a good player. Right? You and I can't sit here and be like, well, Patrick Kane is not a good
player. No, I'm not telling you that. Who's saying that? Nobody.
Yes. No, nobody. But what we're saying is you're not actually addressing the things the Rangers couldn't do these playoffs. This team needs to be deeper. This team needs to have three full lines that it can trust and it can roll. And you're going to have to trade two-thirds of the kid line to get Patrick Kane.
And on top of
how
that,
how does that make your team deeper?
It doesn't make you defensively sound. It also doesn't – how much can you improve your power play? How much – like, Greg, the power play was fucking awesome last year. It was great.
What?
We had a great time, except for the times it didn't score in the playoffs. But other than that, lethal the entire year. And all of a sudden, you're replacing Reinstrom. You're putting Kane there. It's like, all right. How many more goals can we score? Does it really make a difference? Because
how many times in this podcast have we said it's not that the bumper spot on a power play is not important? It's just like it's very clear that Ryan Strom was the Rangers' fifth most important and impactful player on their power play. So why even have Ryan Strom in that spot, and why not use other people? So like you don't need like you're saying. By putting Patrick Kane on the power play, you're not actually upgrading the unit because the other four guys are the thing that makes that unit go. So why would you – it's like if you already have enough money to buy the house, why are you entering a new bid to buy the house?
Exactly. And that doesn't improve your team. Now, I'm sure you saw some of the rumors, at least with Ryan Strom, that he might be willing to take a discount to stay. I want to discuss what that even looks like. Because
I mean, I have an interesting way to attack this conversation.
I'm ready.
And I understand it's shorter, but I think it's more interesting. If we really thought Ryan Strom was willing to take a hometown discount, wouldn't there already be a contract signed?
My only counterpoint to that is he didn't have a pelvis injury before when that happened that he might require surgery on that could affect his future play.
Okay, but then. So the counter to that counter is, well, if I'm now dealing with a broken Ryan Strom, why am I signing him?
It's a great point. Because he might sign for the answer is if he signs for 2 years, $4 million a year. Would you do that?
Yeah, I probably would.
I think I would too.
But my counter is the Rangers aren't necessarily if he's willing to just do a 2-year, $4 million deal, that means his injury is serious, which means he's not ready for the start of the season. And you're at least worried that when he is ready, he's not the same Ryan Strom.
Probably till midseason. Let's put it that way.
Right. So do we think the New York Rangers are a good enough team where they can make it half a season playing three centers, essentially? Even then, it won't even be playing the season with just two guys for three spots. Because I like Barclay Goodrow. I don't think the New York Rangers see him as their third line center necessarily. They see him as a very important part of that third line. But you need something. That third line can't be Barclay Goodrow, Sammy Blais, and Vitali Kravtsov. That's not what the New York Rangers are going for. Right?
Yeah.
So my argument is if Ryan Strom is so injured that he's now shaving at least 3 years and at least $2 million off his price tag, is that good business for the New York Rangers? It doesn't feel like the answer is yes.
I agree with you, but at the same time, I'm like, man, if he was willing to do that, I think I'd have to sign up because I had the craziest thought over the weekend, and maybe it's not that crazy, and I think I prefer Ryan Strom to Andrew Kopp. I still think I prefer Ryan Strom to Andrew Kopp. If they were the same price and you had to tell me I had to choose one, I think I choose Ryan Strom.
But that's just because you're more comfortable and familiar with Strom, right?
Like
you know, you have the experience with Strom. You know it works to a certain extent. So you're minimizing risk. With Kopp, we still like you're opening a can of worms with Kopp where the Strom floor is significantly higher. Because you know what it is, and it's fine. But you don't know necessarily what the floor or the ceiling is with Kopp, which is what makes it so interesting. And for that matter, any free agent or trade the Rangers make. Like it's
Kopp even it's more a level so, of though, because he was played all across all three lines in Winnipeg. He's come out and said he really wants to play in the top six, willing to play in the right wing if he needs to. He didn't come out and say he was hurt. I'm pretty sure he was towards the end of the season and then played through something. I think like people have asked me if Artemi Panarin placed or something, why didn't they announce it? I still believe he was injured. He doesn't want to make excuses. He makes $11.6 million. The last thing he needs to do is make an excuse. Doesn't mean it wasn't there. Just to make my point, there was a Ranger 2 years ago that was playing with a back fracture, and we never found out about it. And they're still on the team. So, yeah, I think I'm just comfortable with Ryan Strome. I know how the power play works. I know how much Artemi Panarin loves him. I think keeping Artemi Panarin is better than keeping Jacob Trouba happy, as crazy as that sounds, even though Jacob Trouba is the GM. Does that make sense?
I don't think Trouba's going to be over. I think Trouba knows this game enough to know that, like, it's a business. If any player on the Rangers besides Adam Fox knows that the NHL is just a straight-up business, it's got to be Jacob Trouba. Because, listen, their friendship, however great it was, wasn't good enough to keep Trouba in Winnipeg, right? So it's not
fair.
It's not like he hasn't done this dance before. And I'm sure he'll continue to talk to his friend, and he'll be thrilled if his friend gets a really rich contract, even if it's with the not Rangers. To me, though, honestly, signing a not 100% Ryan Strome would feel a lot like the Brody Van Wagenen and Wilpon Mets and not the Billy Epler, Steve Cohen Mets. Where, like, again, not to compare him once, it's for a second straight week to Michael Conforto, but the Mets of old look at Conforto, see the injury, and go, well, we'll get him for 2 years. We'll allow him that one rehab year. We're going to still try to be competitive during that rehab year. But when Conforto comes back, just you wait. And whereas this Met regime is like, or we could just sign Mark Canha, Starling Marte, repurpose that money, do good things, make this team deeper, and I don't know, be as close to 100% healthy as we possibly can be on opening day and try to win this thing in April as opposed to waiting until September. Like, it's to me, if you're saying he's injured enough where he's sacrificing years and dollars to come back, then maybe he's too injured to help this Ranger team. And if we're going to say that the window is open, guess what? People need to be ready to go on day one. We don't got time to wait around.
October 11th is opening night, just for reference.
I understand. It's a long season. It's 82 games. And when you have Igor Shesterkin, it might not matter if your forward lineup is 100% healthy. But you're putting a lot of trust in Strome being able to rehab it, come back, and be Ryan Strome again. Like, it, while you're saying you have a comfort level with him, and I understand that, you have to understand that if a guy is that hurt, that his entire free agency is being compromised, then you're not actually getting the Ryan Strome we know. There's a chance you get a different Strome when he comes back, and you're saying you'd rather take that risk as opposed to just going out and getting someone different? Because you're already getting someone different.
I think I was proved, if it was, let me put it this way. If it's just between Kopp and Strome, I prefer Strome. I think the Rangers will explore other options that are not those two. I'm starting to get the feeling, gut feel, no sources, no nothing, that it's neither of them. That none of the people are going to come back. That
all I'm saying is, I don't know if she's a family member, but someone named Bryn Stasny liked one of my Stasny tweets today. That's all I'm saying.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It's not the missus, and it's not a brother or a sister. Hey, but could someone with the last name Stasny, who is a Vegas Golden Knight fan, liked a tweet of mine today.
That's very interesting.
Makes me think.
Want to do a couple quick five stars? We're going to have John Brantley on today. That'll be an interesting conversation. We'll talk. He's a Grammy Award winning baritone. I did that one nice.
Yeah, you may have heard of him.
Yeah, the MSG legend. We'll talk about that with him in a couple minutes. Let's do some five stars and then we can bullshit our way till Brantley gets on. This is from Cribinajad. What's the number one thing the Rangers must improve on this offseason? Scoring, possession, neutral play, depth, etc. It's 5v5, is it not?
Well, it's all those things, right?
Yeah, the answer is yes.
Yeah, but what do we just – like, the Rangers need to be deeper because they need scoring throughout their lineup. You can't just trust on Kreider, Zibanejad, and Panarin to lead your team offensively. They need playoff Edel to carry into the regular season. They need Lafreniere to take his logical next step. They need Kako to be healthy. And they just – they like Vitali Kravtsov is going to be really important. Really, really important.
Isn't it funny how this all comes back to that?
Isn't it? That's life, baby. But, and again, I'll say this. If it's not Kravtsov, it's that roster spot. The Rangers need to pay better attention and be more diligent with what they do with that roster spot. Yes, you can go out at the deadline and get a Frank Vetrano type. Absolutely. But the point, the goal is to not have to make that move at the deadline. And that's essentially what they're hoping Vitali Kravtsov will be.
Yeah, I think they're going to have to. The Rangers defense improved a lot in the Stanley Cup finals or playoffs, whatever. They limited a lot of shots. They were able to rely on Igor when they needed to, but they were also playing great defensive hockey. Weren't really allowing a lot of high danger chances, but they couldn't create on their own whatsoever. And I think a key, which sounds so stupid to say, is that the future playoffs might not be every other day. They might not be the condensed schedule. And that's how I've been looking at it, is the downfall of the New York Rangers. They played 2 7-game series back-to-back, and then they played a Tampa team that was a little bit fresher than them, as they played every other day for 2 months. The conditioning wasn't there. Adam Fox had never played that many games. Igor Shesterkin had never played that many games. Artemi Panarin hadn't played that many games in many years. So the team just was worn out. And maybe that extended run gives them the cardio for next year. They'll have this 3-month break. The schedule won't be as condensed as it was this year. Because even, I mean, Greg, the last 2 months of the regular season, it was like 3 or 4 games a week, was it not? To go from that into the playing 2 games a night for 2 months, all the guys were gassed, which doesn't make, you know, brings me back to the kid point, why the kids weren't playing 25 minutes a night.
Why they weren't taking guys out of the lineup before they got to a point where it was impossible to catch the Hurricanes. Again, it's like these are pieces of conversation.
I still think about that. Right, so I'm going to cut you off. The Ryan Strome Ryan Lindgren played the last night of the season when we were like begging them to bench people, and he got injured that night. What? What are we doing?
How many times do we have to have the load management conversation? It's just that it's funny that it's pieces of conversations we have all the time. And at the end of the season, it's like the bill adds up. And that's exactly what happened. Yeah, I'm not saying if the that's not the point we're not trying to make, is if the New York Rangers rested Ryan Lindgren on April 13th,
no, we're not saying
they would have gone deeper. That's not the point. It's just like, by using load management, it forces you to play people with different people. And the Rangers clearly got out of sorts when they had to put out lineups and rotations that they just hadn't tried before. And if you are managing the load better, you are forced into situations where guys have to play with other guys, so on and so forth. And it's just, it adds up. Like, this is how you end up here. It really is. Yes, the New York Rangers, it got a bit unlucky, but also, like, I don't know. To me, Ryan, if there's one thing I could absolutely positively change about how the New York Rangers played in the playoffs and what I want them to do less of, I just want them to put, like, it's so lame to say, it's so old man hockey, just put pucks on fucking net. Like, I get
it. Dude, the last 3 games were brutal. They couldn't even get it on net.
It looks really fun. It looks really great. The highlight is great when the Rainbow Road pass works, but Jesus fucking Christ, can you shoot for the intent and purpose of creating a rebound? I'm begging.
Last question before we get to Brancy. This is from David. Now that the rebuild is over, we're beginning our cup contention window. Was the best move of the rebuild, lot of luck included, the Rick Nash trade? The answer is yes, by the way. It's not close.
Well, I'm going to say no.
Really?
I'll say no. I'll say it's a part of the Nash trade was the gift that kept on giving, right? If you wanted to say the Nash trade tree, then it's impossible to argue. But to me, I think you have to remember that it was 1-for-1, Strome for Spooner. And because the Oilers bought out Spooner, that extra money secured Artemi Panarin. So, like, if you wanted to
that's a good one.
if you wanted to do one individual move, yes, you got Spooner in the Nash trade. But, like, you got Strome for Spooner straight up, and the Oilers created your cap space to sign Artemi Panarin. But, like, the entirety of the Nash trade is ridiculous. You got the draft pick that was used in a trade to acquire Keandre Miller, Ryan Lindgren, Spooner, and you just, like, all for the price of just taking Matt Bolesky, and that's it. But to me, like, if I had to bring it down to one singular move, I think Spooner to Strome is actually the pivot point.
And with that, let's get to John Brancy. We'll transition over now. Transition. Hey, we're back with our first... Don't have a guest. Okay, it's just me and Greg.
Hey, we did it.
Hey, we're back. Something happened. We don't know what's going on. I'm sure. I hope everything is
okay. Hope all is well. That's really all we can say at this
point. Hope all is well. So you're getting another 30 minutes of Greg and I. We're back, baby. I thought we'd do something fun, Gregory. I have a list of names here. And well, this segment's going to be called What I'm Hearing. You like that? It's okay.
Is it what you're hearing or is it what Mickey Rangers is hearing?
It's the Ocho.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure. Because when you say you're hearing it, it does put your credibility on the line.
So what I do is I pretend I'm an insider and I just follow the Ocho. So, you know, everything he says is gospel. Can't go wrong. If you tweet enough, you'll be right eventually. I think that's how that works.
The funny thing about what Mickey ate and gospel is, like, both things are false. So it works.
Hey! Fun times. He does have a good chart here on names he's heard of, but it's a lot of names we've talked about in this podcast.
Oh, wait, names you've just heard of? He's like, Jonathan, well, do the Ryan.
Sean.
We should have, oh, man, the better bit here would have been like, who are the Rangers going to acquire that Ryan can't pronounce, and why is it Jonathan Toews?
Yeah, it's Toews. Taos, Tays, Tweens, Twos, so many of them. Let's start with Larkin. A name that you and I have talked about a lot over the years.
Probably too much.
I think, yep, I agree with you. Heard a little, again, this segment's called I Heard That. That's why I just renamed it. It's called I Heard That now. I heard about Larkin early last summer, right towards the beginning of the Eichel stuff, that the Rangers could be poking around there. It never really got too serious. From what we learned from the Wing Wheels guys, who have a pretty good pulse on the team, not that Stevie Y really... lets anything out. He's very protective of any information, but it seems like Larkin's their only bona fide center in the Red Wings organization right now. Not only that, he's captain, and I don't see a reason they would move him unless the Rangers significantly overpaid. And then, you're never going to believe this, Gregory, they'd have to extend him afterwards, which is what they're also trying to do to Ryan Strome and Andrew Kopp. So I feel like he's an out automatically.
Well, I also just, we brought up Wing Wheel. Love Wing Wheel. Everybody should follow and enjoy their content as well. And last week's episode, they were talking about trade packages for Kapokako. Because if you were wondering what the ramifications of scratching Kapokako in a must-win playoff game have for other fan bases, it's now fantasy booking trades involving your guys, which I got to tell you, significantly less fun.
Ryan did DM me and said, yep. What would it take to get Kapokako?
And I was like, it's funny because he did the same thing to me. And I was like, Dylan Larkin. And he's like, well, we don't want to do that. And I was like, there you go. You're not going to do Lucas Raymond. So it's like, why have this conversation? I you and I were talking about this as we were trying to think about things that we could talk about, you know, podcasting.
Yeah. Cool.
And I think it is time for us to retire the, we can always trade for a guy on the Red Wings because they're rebuilding. Moniker, because guess what, guys, that is a team on the rise now, which means every player there is there for a reason and has a purpose to serve, and that purpose is not get more assets to keep pushing the window a couple more years. I'm with you. First of all, I think it would be uncomfortable how much you'd actually have to give up to get him. He's not cheap. Second, he's not cheap, which means he's probably going to get paid around Zibanejad's level. And that's not something the New York Rangers have the budget room to do, nor really, like, I like Dylan Larkin, but if you're just giving $17+ million to Zibanejad and Larkin, it's like, I don't think that is part of the plan long-term for this team. Like, that's not where the money's supposed to be going to both those guys. I think the window of opportunity for Dylan Larkin, if you were another organization, has closed. You're done. He's a Red Wing. I'm not going to say for life, obviously, but he is a clear part of the next big push for the Red Wings. And I don't see a scenario in which the Rangers get him. Like you're not getting him without including Kako. You're not getting him without including Lundqvist. And if you're Yzerman and you're pushing the window that much further open, at least one first round draft pick. And I'm good. You're giving up all, again, this is essentially the Patrick Kane conversation, right? Because you're giving up all of that And you're also going to have to pay the man. Like, it's just too much.
Another name that you and I have discussed on this show,
Pierre-Luc
Dubois.
I like Pierre-Luc Dubois.
$5 million cap hit, be signed for 1 year. What would you have to even trade to get a... Is that another Kako trade? Maybe. Even then, it's like, I don't want to do that.
If you're the Jets, you hope it is, right? But I do think with Dubois, there's a possibility you might be able to get him for cheaper because there at least has been rumblings of unrest between the possibility of him staying in Winnipeg long term, right? So
he's 23, 60-point player last year. Has quite the resume. Maybe he can blossom in this situation, but you're going to have to pay him way more than $5 million. Way more.
Oh, God, yeah.
Way more.
Oh, God, yeah. And some of these conversations are unfair, and it's possible that it's unfair for me to bring it up, but it's like 23-year-old, 60-plus point, multi-season, highly productive center going to his third team already? Like, I understand the NHL and the front offices are dumb, but they're not that dumb, right?
I don't think so. There's something there. Maybe he would be great on the Rangers. I'm sure actually he would be great on the Rangers and he would solve their center
because
problems.
The counter to this is like, well, you live in Columbus and Winnipeg and then tell me
you're completely
happy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just like, yeah, I get it to that extent, but he's a highly productive player. But again, it's like the Jets would have to be prepared to blow it up. And if the Jets are going to blow it up, to me, in terms of bang for buck and in terms of what you'd have to give up to get the player, like Scheifele just makes a whole lot more sense if you're the New York Rangers.
Which brings me to JT Miller, another player that's been on multiple teams that has been highly sought after by apparently.
You know what the best part of the post deadline and playoff run was, Ryan?
Not talking about JT Miller?
Oh my God, it was great. I honestly forgot he existed for a little bit.
Yeah, well, he still exists, and his salary is still pretty low, but guess what? He's going to want a new contract. He scored just under 100 points last year. It's $5 million right now, 5.2. Rangers could easily fit it, but you'd pretty much be trading for 1 year of JT Miller. There's absolutely What do you think JT Miller's next contract is? 8.5?
Oh, 9? Again, it's going to be more. If you're uncomfortable paying Strom, I know part of the reason you're uncomfortable, most people are uncomfortable paying Strom is because they see the missed nets. They see what he isn't, so they ignore what he is. But if you are saying that Ryan Strom isn't worth X, then JT Miller is not going to be worth Y. Like, he's not a big enough upgrade over Strom for you to be like, I wouldn't give Strom 6, but I'd give Miller 7.5. Like, that's not smart. I don't like. I disagree.
First of all, there's no way he'd accept 7.5. That would be like.
Yeah, I do think he's going to get – he feels like a guy that gets 8, right?
He gets 8.5. He's a 100-point player last year.
It's nuts. Again, the Scheifele point and to a lesser extent the Stastny point is really the thing that I would be pushing here. If you're the New York Rangers and you've decided you're not in a position with the salary cap to be giving out long-term contracts 4 years plus to any – middle six center that takes you out of the Larkin, the Dubois, and the Miller conversations. Because, yes, you don't have to give those contracts out this year, but you're giving them out. Like, you're getting those guys for 5 years, or at least that's the purpose of the trade. And the assets you're giving up, those are the assets you give up for a guy that becomes part of the long-term picture. That's why, to me, the Rangers just need to find these two-year bridge guys, essentially. Not a bridge in terms of, like, they're bad players. It's just guys you can bring in for 2 years, and you're not worried about year three because you understand that you need to now go find the next guy you can just bring in for 2 years. That's why Stastny, as a free agent, makes all the sense in the world. 36-year-old center who's still highly productive, both offensively and defensively, not going to sign for more than a three-year deal. And that's why, like, again, going back to Dubois, if you're trading for a center from Winnipeg, get Scheifele, who's under contract for 2 years and is not going to be a player that you're necessarily thinking about extending when those 2 years are up. Like, you bring him in, he serves his role. This is again, like, Ryan, I'm going to do something I do a lot on this podcast compared to the New York Mets.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, The Mets gave Mark Canna and Eduardo Escobar 2-year deals because they, and with options for a third, because they see these guys as 2-year puzzle pieces. And then they expect after these 2 years are up to either go find a different puzzle piece or promote a puzzle piece internally. Ryan, I'm going to let you take over for a second. I'm getting a phone call that I think I know who it is.
Okay, sounds good. The pieces that we're talking about just so far in this situation, the one name we haven't mentioned yet is Bo Horvat. And I'm looking at Bo Horvat's stats right now, and I got to be honest with you. Out of everyone we named, and that's Larkin, Pierre-Luc Dubois, Miller, Scheifele, Horvat's the one I'd want to trade for the least out of all these players. His contract is $5.5 million. Last year, he only put up 52 points. Now, I know Vancouver was an absolute mess, was totally awful, but that doesn't mean that he's the player we should be trading for. I think Scheifele, as Greg noted, is the one player that to go after. I think if I had to tier rank them, because I don't think Larkin's a possibility, I think Scheifele and Pierre-Luc Dubois are 1 and 2 for trade targets. I think the most likely is actually JT Miller, but that doesn't mean JT Miller is going to be a New York Ranger. He's been linked by Larry Brooks like a million times. And I'm not sure if Brooks has the juice like he used to have in the rumor side of things. Brooks is still connected in many, 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 many ways. But it just feels like the JT Miller, I know he's like a changed man. And he's changed since the Rangers time and he's become a harder player to play against. 99 points last year. $9.5 million is probably... he could get $9.5 million. Would you be surprised? I don't think you would. I'm not sure. So while I wait for Greg to get back from this phone call, I'm actually going to move on to tier two here, which is the free agents you could possibly sign. Now, there are a couple, and there are a couple that are very interesting. We'll start with the easy ones, obviously, Kopp and Strome. Both those players are going to be in negotiations. I heard this. The Rangers prefer Kopp. Not solid, set in stone. Who knows? I think the Ryan Strome injury is really playing into this, as you probably know. Here's the thing. I can't sign either of them for 5 years. And I think that's the big problem here. When you look at Kopp and Strome, if you go 5 years, like what was the point of trading Pavel Buchnevich if you were just going to play Ryan Strome for 5 more years? Wouldn't you rather just move Hedel up, have Pavel Buchnevich, and what did Pavel make, like 5.25? I know we're talking Pavel Buchnevich on June 20th at 7:16 p.m., and that's ridiculous. But I think I'd rather, if you would tell me, who'd you rather have right now, first line right winger who's point per game player or Ryan Strome? Be Pavel. So if you,
yeah, this, I'm sure everything you said, Ryan, sounds great.
You like that?
I'm positive of it. I have like a word of it. By the way, Branchy's calling in 5 minutes.
Oh, is he?
Yeah. That's... the kid from Stranger Things.
Yes.
They apparently became friends during this entire Ranger run.
Okay.
And John was just giving him a 2-hour voice lesson. And he lost track of time.
I hate when that happens. I hate it. Let's finish this segment up then.
Yeah. We got like 3 minutes.
Yeah, and then we'll do 20 with Brancy and call it a show.
Yeah, I just want to hear about that.
Yeah, me too. I went to the free agents. I talked about how you can't sign Kopp and Strome for more than 2 years. I'm going to do 3 quick names with you. Bergeron. Okay. Do you see a possibility?
No. Bergeron, like Rask, he plays for the Bruins or he doesn't play at all.
Trocheck, is it even, like, he's not going to accept 2 years. There's no way.
0% chance he accepts 2 years. Like, If you're saying Kopp and Strome are not going to accept 2 years, why would Trocheck?
This is the only one I could possibly see, and that's Malkin. I could see it.
No, but like, do the Rangers even have the money to make it worth his while on a 1-year deal?
If he, because apparently the rumor is Pittsburgh offered him like $5 million, right?
But if you're the Rangers, you have to remember it's like to a certain extent we have to remember these guys have feelings about the Rangers too, right? That's a big reason why Claude Giroux didn't want to come here.
Well, if you really don't like the Rangers and you really want to spite your old company that won't pay you $5 million, you might go to the Rangers.
Like, okay, I know, fine. But I think the price to get him in New York is at least 7. And again, if it's 7, like, how are you fudging the books on Kako to do it?
He might take less than 7. He might. He shouldn't.
I'm not getting. I would not get my hopes up with Malkin. I think it's also fair to point out in this moment, while we can't be political, that Malkin is more Ovechkin when it comes to his opinions on Putin than he is Panarin. So I do think that would be at least a something you'd have to ask Artemi about before you sign him. But if Artemi's cool with it, like, yeah, I mean, it's a possibility. I personally, I don't know. I still think some team out there, like an idiotic team, will give him 3 years. Don't you?
Yes.
Like, can't you see the Canucks doing something fucking
stupid? I just see Crosby
like
going into the office and being like, sign my fucking dude or I'm going to be cause hell. I'm just signing my dude.
But I just, or like, I mean, I don't know how the Flyers would do it, but can't you see the Flyers giving him like 4 years?
Flyers, like, they don't have money. Like, I'm sure they have cap space, but I don't think they have money.
No, but can't you see them trade, like, they trade Sanheim and Provorov, two interesting young defensemen, in order to keep Ristolainen and pay Malkin.
Boy,
I can see the Flyers doing that. You kidding me?
God bless John Tortorella.
I love Philadelphia. Almost came out.
Oh.
Now fuck that city. Hope all it gets right. new.
So I guess we'll actually transition to John Brantley now?
We'll actually transition this time.
Okay, I'm going to actually do it. Transition to literally John Brantley. Hey, we're back with our guest, John Brantley, Grammy-winning opera singer and voice actor. John, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you guys for having me on. I'm very, very excited to be here and calling in as I'm driving.
Very, very cool.
John, why don't we go right into why you're driving right now? Because the story is ridiculous.
Well, yeah. I mean, I was visiting my folks back in Jersey. I'm actually from South New Jersey, kind of close to Philadelphia, which is, you know, I have some affinity for the. For some of the Philadelphia teams, not all of them, but I will say the Philadelphia Eagles are near and dear to my heart. But that's kind of beside the point. I was home seeing my parents, seeing my dad for Father's Day. And another character who is from South Jersey in the area is none other than Gaten Matarazzo, who's from the series on Netflix, Stranger Things. He plays Dustin. Dusty. They also call him. And we actually linked up today for a voice lesson because he's going to be going and performing one of the characters in Dear Evan Hansen on Broadway that is going into rehearsals this coming week. And he wanted to do some work on his voice in different ways because it's a really demanding show in a lot of different ways, not operatically so much, but a lot of the things that I've learned from opera, because it's all about stamina, actually, it's one of the biggest aspects of what I do. It translates pretty well to other styles of singing. So I feel like we did a really, we had a really good time. And I met him actually at one of the Rangers games. I can't remember which one it was, but it was when, I think it was during the Hurricanes, when they were playing the Hurricanes.
Incredible. So we were worried. We said we hope everything's okay with John. You know, everything's okay with his family. And then you just called Greg. And was like, yeah, actually, I did 2-hour voice lesson with Stranger Things. It's like, okay, cool. Never mind. We're good. We've been blown up for worse.
Exactly.
Let's start here. How did the Rangers just call you one day and like, actually, you got to do the national anthem, and then we won, and then we could never change it again? How did that whole process go for you?
Well, it was, I can't remember the exact date, but it was late February, as far as I remember. And I was actually talking to this agent that is also one of the music directors of Phantom of the Opera on Broadway. His name is David Lai. And David and I were just chatting on some social media chat, and he posted a video that he was like at Lincoln Financial Field, and I think it was a game where the Eagles beat the Giants, and I kind of was, you know, I was getting his goat a little bit on that.
Nice.
And, and he had asked me if I had ever sung the anthem for anything. And I said, not for a professional sports game. And it turns out that he was actually involved with Madison Square Garden in helping them procure singers for the national anthem. Kind of around the time when Amarante retired, I assume, because they knew that they were going to have a, you know, massive shoes to fill there and need to get some interesting talent in. And so he had been doing that for over, I think, 5+ years. And of course, the pandemic hit and all that. But he asked me to do it, and I was like, of course. He's like, do you want to sing it at Madison Square Garden? Would you be interested in that? I'm like, yes, yeah, of course I'd be interested in doing that. yeah. And so the first game that I did, I think it was the Maple Leafs were there, and it was I had to sing O Canada first. So I didn't even get to sing the Star-Spangled Banner as my first anthem at Square Garden. It was O Canada, because they lead with that. And I don't think the fans knew what to expect, and I didn't know what to expect going into it, because I didn't know that they were going to be, you know, sort of heckling between the stanzas in the lines. But I had such a warm response for my rendition of it, which I, you know, spent a good amount of time kind of figuring out how I would do for this. And it wasn't until I was actually in the arena in the garden until I really understood, you know, what it was going to feel like for me to, you know, sing with a microphone in that large of a space, and to hear my voice in an arena like that was kind of it was an eye-opening experience for me.
Yeah, John, talk to that point you made a little bit more, where you're not just singing the national anthem in front of 18,000 rabid hockey fans, but Ranger fans interact with the anthem in a different way than most other fan bases. Did it catch you off guard very much? Were you prepared for it? Like, does it change how you handle your rendition of the national anthem, knowing that the fans are going to not be sing-songy, but put their own little flair on it?
Yeah, well, I've gotten used to it at this point, if anything, I'm starting to actually, like, play with it. I think it's a lot of fun, because, you know, I can anticipate the different parts of the song that they're going to interact with. And I think that that's great. And the last time that I was there for the viewing party, actually, of Game 6, you know, against Tampa Bay, which, you know, mourning the loss over here, of course, as we all are. But it was an amazing experience for me to be able to sing for, you know, that audience, because it was a different experience, because the team wasn't there, and it was really just an opportunity for me to perform, you know, for the audience at Madison Square Garden. But they still maintained a lot of the same traditions, I guess you can call them, that they normally do. However, they started to sing the whole anthem with me that time. And I would love, you know, in the future, if we keep going with this, that we get to a point where the audience really does get comfortable singing the anthem along with me.
Well, I have to say, watching sports for a long time, not often do people. Obviously, John was that person, but you've taken Ranger fandom by storm in many, many ways. I can't tell you how many people I've seen like, John Brancy's the fucking man. And I agree with them a lot of the time. So where does this go from here? Are you like the official opera singer of the playoffs? What's your official title now for performing at MSG?
I mean, to be honest with you guys, it's a little bit open-ended at the moment. And, you know, I'm okay with that. But I have a professional operatic career that's, you know, really at a really amazing point, but also has had a lot of difficulty coming out of the pandemic. My industry, you know, has suffered pretty serious losses in terms of, you know, 2 years of shuttered venues, essentially, right?
Right.
So the opera world and classical music in general is doing what it can right now to kind of make up for lost time and you know, seriously lost profit. And a lot has changed in terms of where the art form is going, what it's focusing on, and what it needs, you know? So for me right now, I have a couple months off in my schedule. I'm using the time to really like think through, you know, what does this opportunity mean to me as an artist? One of the other things that I wanted to mention is at this viewing party and at the one in Bryant Park as well that they did, I was able to sing New York, New York. And nice. I was able to do it with Ray Pistoli playing on the organ over a live kind of karaoke track, but not a karaoke track that's like low quality, very high quality ensemble performing Frank Sinatra's rendition of New York, New York. So I think there's a lot of opportunity to, you know, sing the anthem for sure, but to also, you know, perform, because that's what I do. I'm a performer. And I love singing, you know? So going back to just kind of answering you directly with an indirect response, it is open-ended for me right now. And I've yet to really kind of have the conversations that define what my schedule is going to be for next season.
Well, John, that dovetails pretty perfectly into where I wanted to go next. Have you seen an uptick in just general interest in what it is that John Brantsey does besides sing the national anthem at MSG? Like, I've had a couple of people slide in my DMs and we just say, John Brantsey's the man as you're singing the anthem. And they go, hey, do you know where I can get more Brantsey? Like, what do I do now? And I'm like, that's a great question. Let's ask him.
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, you know, up until this point, I've been focusing really heavily on kind of maintaining my presence in the world of opera and performing at, you know, it's kind of like a staged thing, right? Not staged in terms of like it's made up.
It's more wrestling. Like you're moving. You're actually stage. Singing, John.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's not wrestling. But you're moving in stages in terms of a career, right? So, like, you start out, I studied at Juilliard. So I lived in New York, actually, for over a decade. And it wasn't until about 2014, 15 that I decided that I wanted to go on the road and live on the road full time. And I did that up until the pandemic, really. And that meant that I was performing and able to, like, basically have my schedule open to perform all over the country. So, you know, many, many states, including Florida, Texas, California, Northern and Southern California, Arizona, Seattle, Washington, all throughout Canada, basically almost every single province. I performed in Edmonton probably four or five times. I performed and won competitions in Montreal, international singing competitions. And I've also performed throughout United Kingdom. I did a tour of the entire country with a company called the Glyndebourne Opera Company, as well as performances in France, all throughout Austria, Germany, and even like obscure places like Moscow and Finland. So I've really been all over the world at this point, and I'm only 33 years old, so I've seen a lot in this time here. So it's amazing to, you know, for me to have gone from about, you know, 2013 was when I graduated with my master's from Juilliard to now, which is basically 10 years later, and come back to New York. And this is the kind of, you know, invitation that I'm coming back to. It's this invitation to be with the Rangers, with Madison Square Garden, and experience what this has to offer. So what do I have out there? I mean, I've worked with a lot of really amazing opera companies and symphonies and stuff like that, but I have a really special collaboration with a friend of mine. His name is Peter Dugan, and he's actually the host of an NPR show called From the Top. And the two of us, we've devised a lot of different programs, some that have, you know, had solo recital is the term, the recital premieres at like Carnegie Hall and Alice Tully Hall and the Kennedy Center. And the two of us have just, we've also gone and done arrangements, original arrangements of tunes. And if you wanted to have a good cry, I would check out our original arrangement of Danny Boy. A lot of people say it's kind of the definitive arrangement of the song.
Well, I do need to cry. The Rangers did lose, so I will check that out.
Yeah.
I got your back on that. Has there been a surprising call you've gotten from the attention you've got at MSG? Obviously, the call we got today when you're hanging out at, you know, Stranger Things actors, that's awesome. But has there been anything else opportunity-wise that you've been like, holy, that you can actually talk about, like that you've gotten from doing the anthem at MSG?
I've gotten called to do some private events, which is for pretty high profile.
Hell yeah, John.
Sorry, did I cut out there?
No, I just said hell yeah. I'm congratulating you. That's awesome.
Yeah. Yeah, and I find that very interesting, and you know, something that I'm open to, depending on what it is. You know, I've gotten asked to do a lot of weddings and some funerals actually, but that's not quite in my wheelhouse. I'm sorry to say, it really would depend on a lot of different things. It's not a flat out no, but it's very because my schedule is quite you know, full, and it's going to get much fuller over these years. It's going to be hard for me to kind of prioritize those sorts of things. But that's been something that's been interesting. And yeah, getting to meet, you know, Michael J. Fox, that was amazing.
That's awesome.
He's a hero, you know, of mine and I think a lot of people's. And it was really cool to see him backstage. And just, yeah, I mean, just getting this opportunity to sing for, you know, not only the fans at MSG, which is, you know, the best, but also all the people that have been able to hear my work via ESPN and other major sports networks, and you know, some of my friends who are opera singers, you know, they were traveling during the time and at an airport bar, and they would see me on TV at the airport bar, or you know, at any random place that they were traveling, or you know, friends and family that I haven't been in touch with for a while, I've been reaching out. So it's been amazing. You know, it's a way of reconnecting with people through my voice and through a song that I feel is, I hope I'm doing it justice, you know, given everything that's been going on in our country and the way that song is, you know, I think hopefully I'm portraying it in such a way that's true.
John, I mean, you obviously, you went to Juilliard, so you're familiar with just how rabid New York sports fans can be when their teams are in the playoffs. But I'd say of any specific team, I think Ranger fans have had a very unique connection to their anthem singers. I mean, you mentioned Amarante earlier, and everything about 1994, you can't talk about it without talking about his renditions of the anthem. At what point in these playoffs did you feel the momentum building where it was like, not only is the Ranger game starting, but it's John Brantsey who is starting this Ranger game? And correct me if I'm wrong, you didn't do game one against the Penguins, so you stepped in for game two, and all you proceeded to do was what, win 8-9 games in a row as the anthem singer?
No, I did game one.
Oh, you
I
did do
game
one.
One.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I misremember.
No, it's okay. I'm pretty sure all of the Penguin games. Yeah, I sang all the Penguin games that were at home, and I missed one of the Hurricane games. I think it was game five. Pretty sure that's what it was. Or game, would it have been game five? They started in.
No, they got ran out in game five, so it was game six.
It would have been game six. I don't think you missed game six. I think, because I remember joking with people that you and the Hurricane singer, who I think was named Adam Lee Pecker, like, I wanted you two to just, like, get in Hell in a Cell and just duel it out.
Yeah, right.
Fun time.
I mean, yeah, I can't remember which one it was exactly. I know it was May 22nd was the date, and that was the date that I was working in Milwaukee with the Milwaukee Symphony on a specific project, and I couldn't be there. So if you can recall which game that was, then that would be the one that the only one that I missed in the entire playoff run.
Was there a moment from the playoffs where you were like, I think this team might do it, even though they didn't?
I had the feeling it was game one against Tampa that I was like, whoa. I was like, they definitely came out swinging, which was interesting for me to see, because I was watching the most hockey I've ever watched consecutively, and you know, some of the best hockey I think I've ever seen in my life, for sure. and just to see how they, you know, were able to play against this, you know, two-time Stanley Cup winning team and come out and beat them. What was the score, 6-2?
6-2, that's correct.
Yeah. I mean, that's a sign to me that the, you know, because you don't just do that, right?
We agree with you. then obviously the rest happened. Unfortunately, we're not in the finals, but we'd love to have you there. So you're saying there's a chance you open a live podcast in New York City. Is that what you're saying? That's interesting.
I'm opening a what?
If there's a chance you could sing before Greg and I do a live podcast in New York City. That's really interesting to hear that. So you're taking private events now. Yeah, that's right. Really nice of you.
Yeah, exactly.
Awesome. John, was there a particular player that interacted with you during the run that was like, I need more Brantley, I need more of this, keep bringing it?
Well, it was actually, I think Truba was on the hot mic the first time. He was like hot mic the first time I sang. And they threw it up on ESPN, I'm pretty sure. And he said, we got to get that guy back. Well, I think those are his exact words. And I think I retweeted it or something like that. And it was just, it was really funny. I mean, I showed it to some of my friends in my world, my music world. And they were just like, that's like the best criticism you'll ever get as a singer, you know, like or as a musician. It's just like, it's just raw, real. And, you know, he just, I mean, I was really impressed by his performance, honestly. And I think I met Keandre Miller when he was doing his warm-ups, and he was a really nice guy. I didn't get to meet the whole team. I would love to meet them at some point, but I think the juju wasn't quite right yet.
Makes sense. John, I want to thank you so much for joining us. Greg, do you have any final questions for our dear friend here?
I have one very important one from a listener and our good friend. Our buddy Woj wants to know what your go-to karaoke song is.
Ooh, this is a good question.
It's a good question. Well, it's got to be something by Queen. I really like trying to sing Freddie Mercury's music. It's not my actual range, but I can sing a mean Bohemian Rhapsody.
That's a good answer. Oof.
That's a great answer. John, if I heard you doing Bohemian Rhapsody at a bar, I think I'd lose my shit.
Yeah, I would too.
I need to be clear. I'm not just being like fangirling, going nuts. I think my soul would leave my body in a way where like Freddie Mercury would take over and would just take everything from there.
It's definitely a little bit more full-throated, as it were. I'm not a tenor. I'm a baritone, right? He was definitely a tenor, but it's a lot of fun. Sometimes, you know, if there's a karaoke situation going on, I've been known to do this. It's kind of like it's my Bill Murray. You know how like people just like end up like bumping into Bill Murray?
Yeah.
Have you ever heard about this? I mean, I have a Bill Murray story myself.
Wow.
I can kind of get into that if you want me to. But
oh, yeah. Well, now we need to know the Bill Murray story.
You cannot say it.
I'll dog-ear the Bill Murray story. It's a bit ridiculous. But everybody has a Bill Murray story somehow. But my thing is, like, if I pass a bar or, like, a karaoke night somewhere and I'm just, like, kind of not planning on it, I'll walk in and I'll sing Bohemian Rhapsody and I'll leave.
That's so rude. Everyone at the bar has to be like, what the fuck just happened?
Yeah. I mean, literally, it's such a hilarious I just drop a bomb and then I just peace out. I don't buy a drink. I don't do anything. I've done it in Brooklyn, I've done it in London, and I think one other place.
What this means is you're just going to get a bunch of Ranger fans now going to random karaoke bars throughout New York City, not singing, just waiting to see if you appear. That's all they're going to be doing now.
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to like normalize, you know, singing We Are the Champions for everybody at MSG at some point. That would
gotta win first, John.
That'd be a lot.
As soon as
fun.
It happens, I promise.
Yeah, I know. We'll save that for the big win for sure.
Yeah, the We Are the Presidents trophy doesn't roll off the tongue the same way.
Yeah, it doesn't.
Yeah, exactly. The one thing I'm hearing is you guys want to, you're confused as to whether to call me Brancy or John. Just call me Brancy. It's fine.
Okay, cool. Brancy it is.
Yeah, well, it's just like I do the thing with all my friends where I never actually call them by their actual name. And I just assume we're best friends now. So I can't just call you John.
Exactly.
How informal.
No. How informal. Yeah, no, that's the thing. I mean, I think I have a lot of friends who call me Brancy, and it's just the name that I go by.
Brancy, before we go, could you tell us your Bill Murray story?
Yeah. So I was 11 years old, and I was coming home from a visit to see my extended family in Denver, actually. I have a whole bunch of family in Denver that are like, you know, they were watching the playoffs, of course, and they're freaking out about the Avs right now. And it was in the Denver airport, and I was 11 years old, and my mother spotted Bill Murray. Known of him from Ghostbusters, and I ended up, because during that time, for whatever reason, I was doing impressions. I wasn't really singing that much. I was like doing impersonations of adult male actors, and I ended up doing an impersonation for Bill Murray of Sling Blade.
Wow. Jesus Christ.
It's a true story.
That's crazy.
Yeah,
I know.
Now I just feel like I need a Bill Murray story. I don't have one.
We do not have one. We do need
You'll get one at some point.
We will.
We'll have one.
Thank you so much. Is there a place like, are you on Spotify? Is that a thing? I didn't even check yet.
Yeah, I am.
Cool.
With Peter. Actually, just to give a plug for that, I've done two albums. One is a live album, and they're both like they go together. There are 51 songs mostly by composers who fought and died in World War I. I did these from 2014 to 2018.
Wow.
And that's where we did Danny Boy, because it was a famous song, the song made famous in World War I. And so 2014 to 2018 was the 100th anniversary of the war. And we spent a lot of time kind of touring to various concert halls, but also. And that's where I ended up, singing my first anthems were for the military community, doing these sets of songs as well. So, you can check that out. It's on Spotify. Just look at my name.
Awesome.
Now, I will say, just so you're prepared, both the Mets and the Yankees seem really good this year. Your talents might be needed outdoors in October. Just clear the month.
I think we lost Sean
How that goes?
Oh.
Yeah. Sorry, I think I cut out a little bit there. I went through dead zone.
All good.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. You're all good.
All right. Cool. Yeah, I'm very interested in that, and it was great talking to you guys. Thank you so much for having me on the podcast.
Of course. Brancy, thank you so much for coming on. You can check out Brancy on Spotify, Google him. Find them everywhere you find opera, and we'll talk to you guys soon. Thank you so much, Brancy.
See ya.
And now it's everyone's favorite podcast time, where I try and read 76 names of our NHL Insiders clubs in a row for the millionth week in a row, it seems, where I still somehow pronounce someone's name differently every single week, despite actually knowing, and even some of you correcting me, I probably will not do this correctly. So, here we go. Adam Cassidy, Adam Cohen, Adam Cotrullo, Adam Keach, Adim Cheech, Adam Keach, oh my god, Alex Carter, Amber Cohenberger, Anthony Tarragotta, Ben Waters, Brett McGinnis, Brian Doyle, Brian Gallagher, Brian Mallon, Broadway Blucher, Bleeder, Chris Fidelli, Chris Hyrule, CJ Selwagen, Conrad P. Demich, Daniel Dezen, David Arrington, David Siegel, Dennis Deitz, Darian, Eric Stagg, Garrett Reynes, Gibb Gardner-Cup, Gretzky, Gareth McFly, Handel, Harrison, Asco, Hip Hip, 89, Holosauce, Ian Rodriguez, Ian Usher, Jake B, James Masker, Jamie Filippone, damn it, I suck, Jerry Marquez, JD, Jimmy Back, JJ, Frankie, JJ, John Hardesty, John Shea, Johnny Thundercock, Jordan, Josh Keston, Bob Justin Freeman, Christopher Florida, Christoph Berg, Laura Ross, I think it's Leigh Schick Gronkowski, I think I'm a Schick, I think I nailed it. I've been saying Lasik. I for the first time in his. Okay. Lou Giordano, Matthew Goodwin, Matthew Kine, Meatball the Cat, Mike Bucklaw, Neil Grover, Nicholas D. Nicola, Pascal Perrier, Pavel Kodarev, Pro World of Tanks Gamer, Randy Tesser, Scottish Grand, Sean Taggart, Stephen Manila, Steve Bullbox, Swinegard, Tommy Welsh, Tom Sicleri, Tom Ertz, Tommy O'Neill, Tori from Hatton Upstate, Vinny Rocco, Vinny Hay, Will Spector, and Winston, the Golden Retriever. This Tampa team's not going to die easy, I don't think. As we're recording this, they just went up 4-2. It seems oddly familiar, doesn't it? I know I'm recording before the end of the game, and it's probably going to bite me in the ass. Tampa just doesn't play the first two games. Why would you? Just show up and get rested. And then while this stupid Ranger team is going out there trying to beat your ass for the first two games, you got them right where you want them, right, Tampa? Oh, boy. I don't know how I feel about it. The Rangers are in the Stanley Cup right now. Oh, I do know how I feel. Sick, nervous, disgusted, happy, elated. All those things and more is how I'd feel to the Rangers being there. But nonetheless, I watched this series, and boy, I think these are the two best teams. I hate to say it. I think Igor could have competed. I mean, honestly, but this Avalanche team is ridiculous. I know this game three is not going the way I expected it to, but man, what two insanity teams. Just shows you how far the Rangers have to go and how much their depth players are going to have to show up along with their superstars. Because you know what Tampa keeps doing? Their superstars? I've been podcasting for too long. Superstars show up too often. Stamkos and Kucherov were everywhere during our series. Panarin just wasn't. I still think he was injured. Might know some things. Who knows? We'll be back next week. Or if you're a BSB OT person, we'll be back Wednesday afternoon. You know where we are. Thanks for listening. Love you guys. Bye.